So hello, everyone. My name is Joe Ali. I'm a Associate Director for Global Programs at the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, where I am also Assistant Professor in the Department of International Health in the Health Systems Program. And today we are bringing you a webinar on COVID ethics and Africa. And this is, we're hoping, will be the first webinar in a series that will uncover and discuss some of the emerging issues related to ethics and oversight of COVID-related activities, including research, public health response, and clinical care in Africa. Today's topic is going to focus on the ethical and oversight issues related to research, health research in Africa. And we've sort of brought together three speakers from Ghana, Zambia, and Ethiopia today to share their the kinds of challenges that they're encountering in their own work, as well as some of the responses that have been developed and some of the ongoing needs. So with that, maybe I'll just introduce our three guests today. From Zambia, we have Dr. Sadi Munsaka. Sadi is a neuroimmune and infectious disease scientist and the head of Department of Biomedical Sciences and, I believe, Dean of the School of Health Sciences. You can correct me, Sadi, if I'm wrong. Yes. At the University of Zambia in Lusaka. In addition, he serves as the chairperson of the University of Zambia's Biomedical Research Ethics Committee. Dr. Munsaka teaches immunology and virology, molecular biology, research methods and bioethics and biostats to biomedical science students, medical students, and other students at the university in Lusaka. His research interests vary, but include pathoimmune mechanisms of HIV-associated neurocognitive disorders, interactions with drug abuse and other infectious diseases, including malaria and tuberculosis. He completed his undergraduate studies at the University of Zambia, and his graduate studies, including a PhD in biomedical sciences and tropical medicine at the University of Hawaii. He also completed a postdoc fellowship in Hawaii in neuroscience. Thank you for joining us, Sadi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was a good introduction. Everything covered. Thank you, Joe.
Welcome. We also have with us Dr. Yimtu Beznash Woldemanyo Mulate, from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Dr. Mulati has a medical degree as well as a PhD in medical microbiology. She serves as associate professor in the College of Health Sciences at Addis Ababa University in Ethiopia, and has served for two terms as head of the Department of Microbiology. She was previously a fellow of the Western Institution Review Board, WERB in the U.S. In addition to her duties as lecturer and researcher at AAU, she currently serves as a co-chair in two IRBs in AAU in Addis, including the College of Health Sciences IRB and that of another research institute. Again, like Dr. Munsaka, Dr. Woldemanyo has a diverse background in infectious disease research, mainly focusing on diagnosis of infectious diseases and hospital-acquired infections and antimicrobial resistance. And she's notably involved with a number of collaborative research groups, but including the Center for Innovative Drug Development and Therapeutic Trials for Africa, or CDT Africa, which is a semi-autonomous World Bank supported regional center of excellence for education and research that seeks to support more equitable access to interventions, including medicines and vaccines and diagnostics, to bring about development in Africa through high quality capacity development and novel therapeutic discoveries supported through clinical trials. So welcome, Dr. Woldemanyo. Thanks for joining.
Thank you, Joe, for the introduction. Thank you.
And then lastly, we have Dr. Paulina Tindana, who's a senior lecturer and bioethicist at the University of Ghana in the School of Public Health in Accra. Before she joined the faculty at the University of Ghana in 2018, she was the Deputy Chief Health Research Officer at the Navrongo Health Research Center in Ghana. It's in the northern part of Ghana, and she worked there for over 20 years conducting social science research and supporting research ethics review processes and training of various research ethics committees, and as well as providing community engagement activities. So her teaching and research focuses on the ethical, social, and cultural and policy implications of international collaborative research, and particularly the practical ethical issues arising in genetics and genomics research, informed consent, ethics review, and community engagement strategies in global health research and health systems research. She's published quite a bit on these topics and has contributed to various international consortia, including the H3 Africa Consortium, which is trying to support enhanced ethical review and consideration and governance of genomics research across the continent. So welcome, Paulina.
Thank you very much, Joe.
All right, with those introductions, let's maybe turn to the topic for today. So I think one of the large motivators for this conversation, and we've discussed this previously as a group, is that we noticed that there's been quite a bit of discussion in scholarly work, as well as sort of guidance that has been developed and oriented towards the global north, where admittedly a lot of the burden so far of COVID-19 seems to exist. However, there are increasing COVID burdens we see across the global south, and the impact of COVID seems to be quite different in different parts of the world, and indeed in different communities within different parts of the world. So we wanted to make sure that some of the ethical issues that are surfacing across the continent in Africa are being heard, and that that your experiences are also being documented, so that to the extent possible we're able to work together as a global community and trying to support each other on these issues. So with that, I'm going to sort of maybe run through a few different questions with the group, and we'll be grateful to have your sort of thoughts and discussion on them. And we're going to focus today, as I said, on the COVID and ethics issues related to the conduct of research, and we're going to think about it in two layers. First, the ethical and oversight issues that relate to non-COVID research and management there. And then secondly, related to COVID-specific research and anticipating some of the research challenges and issues in that domain. Let me start first with the non-COVID research, and maybe would ask, if you're willing, Saadi, for you to say a few words first about maybe some of the institutional or other challenges that IRBs or others are facing with respect to non-COVID research in Zambia.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much, Joe. And I think for me, I think the first challenge right now is that because of COVID, everything is thinking COVID. And so we are seeing a lot of protocols, especially expedited protocols on COVID, and also a push to actually have these out, because the epidemiology is changing very fast. And so if you take even a week, you'll find that the protocol may actually change. So what is happening is that in terms of challenges is that there's some kind of a hold where the non-COVID protocols are not prioritized. And I feel that that is a big challenge. Especially that in our setting, when you look at the numbers, we have a lot of HIV, TB, and other infectious diseases, including non-communicable diseases. So balancing review processes for these is one of the challenges. So hopefully we can go around it. Yes.
Thanks. Yimtu, would you like to add anything with respect to non-COVID research?
I think the same thing like Saadi mentioned, that everything is focused on COVID, but the issue with our ethics review was related to how we address those non-COVID research that are still ongoing. So we have to meet and decide, because this thing has changed a lot for us in our general our coordination of our work, because now we have to meet online. So we were that was a big change for us also, because usually face-to-face meeting was the norm, and then we had to talk about how we are going to address already existing non-COVID related studies that are ongoing. And then we have to look at non-COVID related studies that will be submitted, new protocols. So we have put in place some issues, I mean, some changes, how to manage those. And we are advising also some of our non-COVID related studies, how to go about their studies, because now we have this physical distancing and all that. So for studies that are having these close contacts, PIs are also consulting with the IRB how they should go along. So these are issues that have come up, which we didn't anticipate. And in addition to that, just to add on what the problem of, non-prioritizing the non-COVID is, because we are having problems already with research with TB and so on, and those are being neglected. So we have that ethical issue that we are trying to address. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Yimtu. Pauline, on that last point about, thinking about social distancing in relation to the conduct of research, non-COVID research, that involves, oftentimes research involves, contact and communication with communities in various settings. And I wonder if you have some thoughts about some of the issues that relate to research being, altered in various ways that when they, in order to respond to needs of social distancing.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Joe. So I'd like to look at this in three different ways. And the first is ongoing research activities that have already been approved by the ethics committee and whether those research activities should go on or not. Then the second has to do with proposed research activities that are yet to be reviewed by the ethics committee and what priority should be given to those protocols, especially those that are non-covered. And then the third is COVID-related research protocols that would still need some kind of face-to-face interaction with research participants and communities. And so to take each of these points individually, the first is that there's been a directive that all non-COVID research-related projects should cease, especially those that involve direct contact with research participants and communities. And that is quite challenging, again, because there are some of the activities here that can be done like over, that might not necessarily require contact with research participants. So for example, protocols that require interviews, initially if they were face-to-face interviews, is there the possibility of changing this to say telephone interviews? Still, by doing that, respecting that those social distancing protocols. So those are some of the questions that we are asking. Yes, we want to be able to make sure that researchers are respecting social distancing protocols. But are there alternative ways where that research can still go on using different means of obtaining the data? And for some, especially for student protocols, that can easily be done using by just calling key informants for interviews. We are considering whether those research protocols can still go on, but still limiting research protocols that require active engagement with research participants. And the challenge there has actually also been that right now, most people are all concerned about COVID-related issues. And so to go and start even discussing issues that are not related to COVID becomes quite a big problem, especially for research participants. Do researchers have an obligation to respond to issues related to COVID, especially if it's not related to their own projects? If you are focusing on malaria, and you need to even interview community members about malaria-related issues. Community members might be interested more in getting your views about COVID and understanding exactly what the issues are and how they can protect themselves. So does that then put an obligation then on researchers to respond to those issues that are not within the remit of their own projects. And so that has become a big challenge. And so with the directive to limit research activities, I think it also addresses issues where researchers might be forced to shift their attention more to COVID-related issues than their own research protocols. So moving forward, I think one of the things that ethics committees need to look at is, yes, in reviewing research protocols that are not COVID-related, is it possible to look at activities that can reasonably be conducted and still addressing issues around social distancing? And I'm talking about this because we have a lot of students who are currently going through a lot of challenges with all the uncertainties about when they are likely to graduate. And so, and because of the uncertainties around when COVID is going to be resolved, we don't know when this is going to be resolved. So it is sort of affected the academic calendar in the first place. And a lot of students are anxious. Is it possible for them to still be able to conduct their research projects and respect, you know, those social distancing protocols so that they can go ahead and complete their studies? And those are some of the challenges that ethics committees are currently battling with. And I'm hoping that as we go on, we can raise some specific issues around these.
Yeah, thanks very much, Paulina. I'm aware that that across Africa and universities and research institutions, it's very common for students at all levels, undergraduate and graduate, to be conducting empirical research which involves contact with humans. So it must be quite a difficult situation. Yimtu, I think you wanted to respond a bit to Paulina's comments.
Just to add on what we are doing, just to prepare for this ongoing, specifically ongoing clinical trials. We have in this CDT Africa, the project that you mentioned in my introduction, we have a committee which is called ACT, which is an advisory committee for clinical trials. And one of the things that we are trying to do there is have a provisional kind of guideline for clinical trials during COVID pandemic. So we have divided it into two: the ongoing clinical trials, and then the new clinical trials that will come. So we had, you know, we are lucky to have international guidelines, which we try to adapt, like the FDA has brought out a new for ongoing clinical trials. So we have contextualized it to our setting, and we are trying to come up with this kind of guidelines that will assist researchers and ethics committees. So we have provisionally put in place that, and we are thinking about, you know, helping the, you know, overall guideline in the Ethiopia, so that when we finish, we'll share it with those who are responsible for this. So that is some of the other issues beyond our IRB that we are trying to do. Thank you.
Sadi, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I wanted to just add in under a minute, and because I spoke earlier, so I focused on the review process, but I want to agree with Paulina's comments. And so in Zambia, before COVID, we had some civil unrest, and so a lot of protocols that involve teams going into communities were stopped because of the civil unrest. And then when we were just about to open, then the COVID actually came in. So what we are doing is we are receiving a lot of protocol modifications to do phone interviews or some kind of electronic interviews for those types of research projects where people go into communities. And then we've also asked researchers to abide by day-to-day government regulations on movements and social distancing. And some hospitals, people are not allowed to come in. And so participants cannot come in for their own safety. And then also the safety of research teams. So those are all the issues that we are facing and addressing here in Zambia. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we switch to COVID research-related issues, I wanted to, you're all sort of chairs or co-chairs or leading ethics committees in Zambia and and Ethiopia and Ghana. And I wonder if there are variations in terms of how you've managed as an ethics committee to continue to do the work that the important work that you're asked to do in your settings, given the need for you to social distance. Yes, Hadi.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So I think for us, because before COVID, and should I say this year or beginning last year, we started our electronic submission through Rhino. So everything has been coming through electronically. So in terms of our IRB, there's been very little traffic because everything is done electronically. So the next step we have done is after COVID to start having e-meetings. And this has been very easy because our submission of comments before was electronic. And so when we came for meetings, all the comments would be there. So we would have very few discussions and our meetings were becoming shorter and shorter. So with COVID, we've taken all that online through the Zoom platform. And it's easy for the staff in the IRB office because we already have the comments. So members just log into Zoom and have some discussion, quick reports. Yeah. So really we haven't met physically and we are able to do everything online. And our efficiency has not been hampered by COVID. And so I think that is a plus. Yes.
Thanks, Sadi. Yimtu, if you might be willing, what has the transition been like for the ethics committees in your institution? Okay.
We don't have yet in place electronic submission, but after this social distancing, we have started, you know, accepting proposals by email. And then it was very easy to transit to virtual meeting. So we have had regular meetings, we have had emergency meetings, even in weekends. So it has been very easy. And I personally have realized that how easy it is to do things virtually for some things, like, you know, meetings and so on, where we can have also members, you know, quorum, there's no problem with quorum and so on. So it, in a way, it's it has solved a lot of things. So we are having Zoom meetings for our ethics committees, both in both committees that I serve in. We are having these meetings.
Thanks, Yimtu. Paulina, do you have any things to share from Ghana?
Yes, please. And so, first of all, just to highlight the importance of having, you know, online submission facilities, because COVID is really highlighting the need to have this kind of facility for most ethics committees. And from my experience with the ethics committees in Ghana, most of the 18 committees don't have electronic submissions. And so most ethics, researchers still have to submit hard copies of research protocols, especially in the committees that I'm involved in. But since COVID started, but maybe just to backtrack a bit, before COVID started, the committee had put in place mechanisms where research IRB members who are unable. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No worries, Paulina. We all have our children too, and it's a difficult time. Part of the complexity of managing the work we have to do. Yeah. So I think we'll come back to that point, Paulina, in a moment. Maybe while.
Yeah, so just to conclude, yep. That. So before COVID, most IRBs had in place mechanisms where if you're a reviewer and are unable to attend the meetings in person, you could send your comments. And so following COVID, the protocols that the hard copies that we received before COVID and the directives about social distancing, what we did was to review them and then to send our comments via email to the secretariat to compile and submit to the ethics committees, the researchers. The challenge now is that moving forward, because our current system is to receive hard copies, we need to think about moving that process into more electronic submissions. And not all members of ethics committees have access, you know, to facilities where they can download huge, you know, documents via the internet. So that's something that we are thinking about. But so far, all the protocols that we have seen since the first directive was given about social distancing 6 weeks ago has been COVID-related protocols that are submitted via mail, but no protocols have been submitted, certainly for the committees that I'm involved in, no protocols have been submitted via email to us for review.
Thanks, Paulina. That's actually a good transition to maybe a brief discussion about those COVID-related protocols and maybe some of the challenges and issues that are arising in that area, either from the perspective of, again, your institutions or the government of your countries or maybe even researchers. So I don't know who would like to maybe start there, but are there, maybe Yimtu, if you're willing, since you're involved heavily with many clinical trial activities in Ethiopia, is there something you're able to share maybe about some of the challenges related to management of the COVID-related protocols?
Okay, thank you. One thing that, the challenge, of course, is, everybody's aware that the importance of research at this time is very, crucial, that, it's a much needed research. It's a global health crisis, and we need, there's no treatment and so on, and the tension that produces with the, responsiveness of our ethical review system, how fast we review and, facilitate the process has been a challenge. And, even though we are cognizant of this, the need to facilitate the review process, our main responsibility as ethics committees is the same. Like, we have to protect, the rights, safety, well-being of the potential research participants, and which are now mainly, most of them are vulnerable population. And then on the other hand, we have that, the need to facilitate the fast review process. So because we anticipated that, of course, it's research protocols will come, in both of the ethics committees that I served, especially in the College of Health Science, we had our meetings, and then we came up with the process where we can accelerate the process of review. Accelerating time. So what we did was we came up with certain criteria how we review the COVID-related research, which we had recently, of course, protocol that we reviewed, and then that one we send it to primary. We have a primary reviewer system, so we send it to two primary reviewers, and within 48 hours, we call an emergency board meeting. So just to tell you our first experience, we had the Ethiopian Easter just it's a week after the other Easter celebration, I think. So during that time, even on Easter, we had an emergency meeting. So the IRB members were kind enough to participate in the meeting. So this kind of, rapid response from the ethics committees has been, one of the positive things. So we have waived some of the, redundant things that were already in the system, while the review process has to be, we are trying to do it as robust as possible, as rigorous as possible, because there are many unknowns in this disease, and there are many ethical issues that we're looking at. So we try to review it as much as possible in that way, just accelerating the time. So in this process, we have also tried to change our SOPs for emergency meetings and so on. These are some of the changes that we have we are trying to do.
Thank you. Paulina, if you could, just for a moment, I know you have some experience from recent outbreaks of Ebola in West Africa, and I wonder, from a community perspective, are there particular issues related to research that maybe are emerging in Ghana and in the region, thinking about COVID and lessons learned from the Ebola research response?
Yes, Joe, thank you very much. So right now, I haven't seen any protocol for a clinical trial on COVID in Ghana. I mean, there might be, but I haven't seen any protocol on that. The COVID-related research protocols that I'm aware of are those that seek to explore more social science, explore people's views, knowledge, attitudes to even social distancing. And most of these are also using online surveys and also telephone interviews to explore people's views on this. But this is something that we as a country have to also prepare for, especially as we move into more biomedical and clinical trials related to COVID. And the experience we've had with in the past with Ebola, I'm sure most of you are familiar with the failed clinical trial in Ghana, where because of misunderstanding in the public about why we were conducting a clinical trial on Ebola in the country, actually led to that clinical trial not taking place. And so we've learned a lot of lessons from that. And one lesson had to do with the need for us to engage with the public and engage with the community as early as possible, especially when it comes to media engagement. Because there seemed to be a lot of discussion in the media about COVID that is sending wrong signals to communities and to the public, and it's creating some kind of mistrust for science. And so for us, from where we sit, we think that it is important for us to think carefully about not waiting until we have a protocol before we start engaging with the communities. And that it is important for us to take science communication as seriously as possible and to start it as soon as possible. What is happening right now is that, especially for the media, every journalist thinks they can write about COVID-19, because there's a lot of information out there. And although some journalists speak to scientists, they tend to also want to interpret what the scientists are saying. And that sometimes leads to confusion from the public's point of view. And so it's important that we think about using innovative ways to actually engage with the community. What is actually happening now is that a lot of the engagement is through the media especially through social media. And not everyone actually has access to social media, especially those in our communities. So I know of individuals and organizations that have taken it upon themselves to actively engage with communities using mobile vans. So because COVID-19 has challenged our traditional method of engagement, which involves face-to-face meetings and gatherings and community debates, we can no longer use those means of engagement anymore. So some institutions are using what they call mobile vans, where they put a speaker on a vehicle and then use that as an opportunity to disseminate information about COVID-19, not non-research, non-COVID related research. I'm speaking specifically about COVID-19 campaign, where there's the need for us to already allay the fears of people around the disease itself, and then the role of research in addressing those issues. And so increasingly, because of our experience with Ebola, we are making efforts to ensure that the issue around community and public engagement is taken seriously right from the beginning. Because if we don't do it now, then it's likely that it's going to affect how people perceive clinical trials, because clinical trials already evoke a lot of community concerns. And so, and then again, COVID-19 itself also evokes a lot of concerns and fears. So you can imagine putting the two together. And that's where innovative ways of community and public engagement is very important. And I'll be interested to hear what others are doing in their various countries as well.
Yeah, thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. Sadi, maybe you can weigh in on this before we wrap up. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, in terms of our response, for us, we've done public engagement. Myself as chair, I've appeared even on national television talking about ethical issues and talking about COVID, because there's a lot of mistrust that has come, especially from the the French doctor issues and all that. So the entire community here is outraged, and all the communities here are actually saying we can never have any kind of research, especially vaccine trials or drug trials in Africa. So there's a huge uphill battle to educate our public concerning that. I had a radio show interview lasting almost 2 hours with CIDA's chief scientific officer there, where we even opened up questions from the public, and we had a lot of outraged callers who were calling. So we really need to ramp up this public engagement. In terms of challenges for COVID, I just want to go briefly. We are receiving protocols mostly in epidemiology, more social science, and some biomedical, but we haven't yet received drug or clinical trials with that. So some of the ethical challenges we are facing for COVID is a lot of people are asking, of course, for expedited review, which we have accommodated. And then also, there are a lot of waivers of consent that are coming. And so we are reviewing a lot of issues having to do with privacy and confidentiality, because a lot of people feel that, especially that care here is done by the government, and a lot of information is collected. So now people just want to go and dig up for this information and all that. So we are having a lot of challenges to review these waivers and how we can actually ensure issues of privacy and confidentiality are dealt properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Sadi. Thank you very much. I think we'll probably wrap up for today. So let me just thank you all very much, and see if there are any kind of remaining comments that you'd like to share in the last minute or two. Yimtu, I think you would like to share something.
Yeah, it's just one thing that I wanted to share, because, you know, even though I realize there are country-specific issues which are associated with the health crisis, but what COVID is showing us is that we really share a lot of things that we are in many ways united. So we are trying to look at one disease globally affecting the whole of humanity. So I feel that this, even in ethics, the need is harmonization in oversight in ethical issues and so on, be it in the country or regional or otherwise global. So I feel that there is a need to come together as a whole to solve this kind of issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Yimtu. I think that's a good point for us to wrap up on, and maybe we can pick up on some of that during our next conversation when we think about some of the challenges related to resources in treating COVID patients and related issues, where sharing of those resources globally is going to be critically important, and we already know that it is now. So let me thank you again, Dr. Munsaka, Dr. Old Emmanuel, and Dr. Tindana for joining today and sharing your experiences across various regions of Africa. So thank you again.
Thank you, Joe. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.